World Cup, World Cup. Every 4 years it's the World Cup, World Cup. If you don't pick up a grunt straight in the build-up, then we'll love it when you score a goal.
Ooh, did you see that?
World Cup, World Cup. It might all end in tears or a headbutt. You can follow all the blogging on your laptop. From Slovenia to Slovakia, from Nigeria to the Cote d'Ivoire.
Ooh, Cote d'Ivoire.
The Guardian and Observer, packed with World Cup coverage every day.
The Guardian. The Guardian Books Podcast with Sarah Crown.
Hello and welcome to the Books Podcast. I'm Sarah Crown and I'm holding the fort for Claire while she takes some well-deserved post-Hay holiday. In this week's programme, we turn our attention to graphic fiction. It has long played a part in our culture in the form of strips and comic books, but over recent years, in fact probably since the mid-1980s, when DC Comics published Alan Moore's game-changing Watchmen, it has morphed into a widely respected literary form. Last Sunday saw the launch of the Observer Cape competition for graphic fiction, and we'll hear from the artist Julian Hanshaw, who won the prize in 2008 with his haunting seaside tales Sand Dunes and Sonic Booms, later. First, though, I'm joined in the studio by one of the prize's judges, Rachel Cook, and comic devotee Ned Bowman, who blogs on graphic fiction for The Guardian, to talk about what it is that makes the medium so vital. And Rachel, you had something of a Damascene conversion to graphic fiction, didn't you?
I'm not sure how exactly Damascene it was, because I think this must have been latent in me, because I was quite a comic-y child. I mean, we lived abroad, my parents were divorced and we lived abroad, and my dad used to post the Beano and the Dandy and Bunty to me every week. So, but anyway, and I always loved Tintin and things like that, but I did have a sort of conversion. I thought that graphic novels were for kind of people who listened to Slash and had long, greasy hair and fetid bedrooms and, you know, smelly
pants. I
would
just like to point out to listeners that Rachel's hair is in no way greasy at all.
And I had this whole aversion to comics. But what happened was I just read some really, really good ones. The one that was really the turning point was this book, Fun Home, by Alison Bechdel, which is a memoir. An annoying thing about graphic novels is they're very rarely novels, and this was a memoir. It was the complete sort of literary experience. I mean, it was as satisfying to read as a good novel. The words were as good as the pictures, and it seemed to me that the pictures had brought something extra to the book that she couldn't have done in a novel. And it was a book about basically finding out that her father was gay and they'd had a penchant for young boys, and it was just a great book. And after that I kind of went mad on them and I just read tons. And then by coincidence I got involved with starting this competition, and I suppose what I love about them more than anything is you can have a satisfying literary experience, but in a, you know, sometimes only half an hour. You can read one of these books in half an hour or an hour. So they kind of reach parts that novels don't reach. You know, when you're feeling a bit weary, you don't really want to pick up Jonathan Franzen because it's too fat.
Too heavy.
Yes, but, you know, you can read one of these and it's, you feel quite childlike as you're reading them because you're lying back, you know, with your wide book open. But it reaches the same things in your brain, I think.
And Ned, what about you? It's a bit more of a long-term passion, isn't it?
I'd agree that it's about reaching places that novels don't reach, because although I devote most of my time now to literary fiction, I still love suspense and adventure and excitement and good versus evil, and I've never found a purer mode of delivery for those things than superhero comics. And I think also because a character like Batman, I've now been following his ups and downs for probably 15 years, which is most of my life. I don't ever expect to find another character in comics that is the same sort of constant moral inspiration and personal anchor that Batman is. It's fun looking for the really good ones who might at least come close.
So you're talking about comics and Rachel was talking about graphic fiction. What's the difference?
I don't want to traduce your position, Rachel, but the ones that I believe you're into are the more sort of realistic, everyday, more literary, in a sense.
Yeah, I'm personally not into superheroes at all. And I have read Alan Moore, but I've read From Hell rather than Watchmen. Right. Or so Cape Crusaders, I can't really do that. I mean, you know, I'm not going to lie about it. I'm a sort of book snob, so I want stories, as you say. I want stories and I want, you know, investigations into human psychology.
So I've been reading, you blogged on the subject for the books blog, on guardian.co.uk books. And one of the things that came up quite a lot in the comments, as well as many, many recommendations, was this question of snobbery, whether there still remains a degree of snobbery in the way that we treat graphic fiction. And even the term itself, I suppose, is a bit of a PR coining, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
to make it acceptable.
I interviewed Daniel Klaus last week, and he said to me that he had railed against this term graphic novel for ages and ages just because it was so inaccurate. But he'd finally come to accept it because he felt that at least now people know what a graphic novel is, even if it is inaccurate. And he thinks that's helped people like him to get kind of more credibility and kudos. I mean, I think there is still snobbery, but what I would say about those people who posted on the blog is that they're the biggest snobs of all, because they are so chippy and proprietorial about their little area, and they don't want people like me to get involved. And I just think that's madness. I think the more people that know about these things, the better. And, you know, actually, I'm not going to take my tank off their lawn. And I actually think the opposite. Those people and the books that they're writing about are, you know, people do take them very seriously, in my opinion, too seriously. I mean, the way people write about Alan Moore, it's like he's, Moses just come down from the mountain with his tablets.
So Alan Moore is the author of Watchmen, probably most famously, which I mentioned back at the beginning of the programme. And it's sort of seen as the game-changing book, I think, or I gather, the one that moved us, you know, the one that sort of washed some of the snobbery away, since that's what we're talking about, and allowed graphic fiction to be something that we can talk about in literary pages and treat as literature. Do you think that's true, Ned? Was that really the book that changed everything? And is it as good as everyone says it is? Or has the conversation moved on from there now?
Well, it is pivotal and it is a masterpiece, but it occupies this very strange position in that lots of people who aren't normally interested in comics read Watchmen without ever having read a conventional superhero comic, which is a bit like if you saw that Dead Man, which is that Jim Jarmusch postmodern Western, without ever having seen a real Western. Mm-hmm. Watchmen was primarily intended as a commentary on superhero comics. So if that's the first superhero comic you read, it's a sort of weirdly hollow way of approaching the whole thing. But it is brilliant, but it means, if that's the first thing people get to, then they're not really, even if they see that it's good, it will be difficult for them to understand how good, because they're not aware of what it's about, really.
And so what would you recommend then for, let's do this in two halves, Ned, what would you recommend the backstory to Watchmen? What are the comics that people should have read to give them a way into reading it?
The problem with trying to get into superhero comics is that...
God, it started when you were six.
The mythology is so sort of dense and ossified that it can take hours on Wikipedia before you can even pick up a relatively friendly looking comic with Spider-Man on the cover.
See, this is making me feel again, this is sort of feeding into the idea that it's a bit of a geeky pursuit.
You see, for someone like you, you probably need to stay away, I would say, from from superheroes and just read, you know, the books that are being published as graphic novels.
Yeah.
And yeah, you'll find lots of things you like and you'll feel quite calm as you see them, because there's nothing, you don't need to know anything to read them.
And so which are the ones, Rachel, that you would recommend?
Well, if you're really starting at the beginning, then everyone needs to read Mouse by Art Spiegelman, which is a book about the Nazis and Jews. The Jews are mice, the Nazis are cats, and it's a beautiful book. But it is very, I mean, it's been around for, you know, 20 years now. It's not a new book. But, I mean, more recently, I like a lot of the American artists. I like Adrian Tomine, Craig Thompson. I love Charles Byrne, who wrote a brilliant book called Black Hole, which is set in 70s Seattle, and it's a sort of dystopian novel about teenagers who are catching this sexual plague. I like some of the sort of really narcissistic people like Joe Matt and Seth. Seth's new book, my review of that is about to be in The Observer, I think. And I like some of these women, like I said, Alison Bechdel. She also has done a very long running strip. She's a lesbian, and she wrote this strip called Dykes to Be Afraid Of, or Dykes to Watch Out For. And it's been collected into a big book, which Jonathan Cape have published. And it's very, very funny. It's quite savage, actually, about the lesbian community. And I would recommend her. But, I mean, there are tons of them. You know, you can... Jonathan Cape, you know, the poshest publisher in the land, publishes a lot of them. And if you're a real beginner like me, as opposed to Ned, that's quite a good kite mark, because there's nothing too scary in any of them. You know, they are just beautifully drawn, beautifully written. Yeah.
And so, Ned, what about for our more diehard fans who I'm sure will be listening?
Well, actually, the one I normally recommend to people is called Runaways by Brian K. Vaughan, which is a Marvel comic, and it's about superheroes and very much in the Marvel idiom, but it's all new characters, and Brian K. Vaughan is actually 10 times as talented as a lot of the comics writers that I find myself still quite loyal to. And it's very funny and frequently quite moving, and it's a sort of teen romantic comedy with a lot of fights. So that works both if you've never read a superhero comic before, but also hardcore comics fans love it. I mean, if you are already immersed in it, probably my favourite is the run that an American writer called Brian Michael Bendis did on Daredevil starting in about 2001, which ran for 60 issues, which means about 5 years. It's a huge achievement about the mob leaking Daredevil's secret identity to the police. And I think anyone who likes The Wire will get a lot out of that comic.
Okay, well, that's a good recommendation. We'll round up all of these names and have them in a list on the website for you to go and consult. Ned, I just had one more question for each of you, actually. Different questions, though. Ned, I happen to know that you are just about to publish your first novel. As such a fan of graphic fiction, why have you decided to write a novel instead?
Actually, I would love to write a graphic novel, and I do hope to one day. I share a publishing conglomerate with Jodie Pico, and she's a comics fan, and she occasionally used to put comics references in her books. And one day someone from DC Comics noticed and said, "Would you like to write for us?" So she ended up writing 6 fairly well-received issues of Wonder Woman, which is why in my book, Boxer Beetle, you'll find a slightly spurious passage about Batman and how much I love him, just of the kind that I intend to put in every one of my books until finally someone from DC Comics or Marvel Comics notices and asks me in the same way to write for Batman or even one of the much more minor characters, which would be a joy. But I'd love to do a kind of Jonathan Cape original graphic novel as well, but it's I can't draw myself, so it's all about finding an artist who's willing to put in the hours and is right for your style.
And Rachel, finally, the Observer Cape Graphic Short Story Prize. Why does this prize matter? Why is it important to have a prize like this?
Well, I think it's the only competition of its kind. I mean, you know, it's for unpublished artists. You get to be published over 3 big pages in the Observer. You get your work on the website. Julian Henshaw, you know, won our prize and has now got a publishing deal with Cape. It's a great shop window. I hate that expression, but you know, we have amazing judges. I mean, this year it's Audrey Niffenegger as one of the judges. I'm really proud of it, you know, and it's a great. We've managed to reach a whole new load of readers as well because we've tapped into this world, you know, and it's just, I think it's brilliant.
Okay, the prize is open to anyone to enter. The deadline for submissions is October the 6th, and if you want to enter, visit guardian.co.uk/books for information. Julian Henshaw publishes his first full-length work, The Art of Foe, next month. Richard Lee met up with him and asked him how he came to produce graphic novels.
I've been working in the animation industry for about 12 years, and I'd lost my love of animation. I'd been trained at the National Film School as a director and bit of an auteur in that respect, as you do when you come out of the film school, and slowly I'd been sucked into the studio system and my creative juices had dried.
This is a break for freedom, then.
So yeah,
I want
exactly.
to ask, what is pho, then?
Pho is a Vietnamese noodle soup. The Vietnamese have it for breakfast, lunch, dinner. It is their national dish.
And so where did the idea come from to write a graphic novel about a tiny blue pho chef, then?
I visited Vietnam back in, I think it was 06 was the first time. And I was, my socks were kind of blown off in different directions when I arrived in Vietnam. I just had an epiphany moment, really. I arrived at the right moment in time for me where I needed a change. I needed something different, a new experience. And when you step off the plane in Saigon or Ho Chi Minh City, it's an alien world. And it felt absolutely right from the first moment I walked in there.
Was it the different culture or the different environment?
It was. It was the smells, the honking of the mopeds, the kind of the chaotic, frenetic atmosphere of the city, and the heat. I love the heat. So.
And you just sort of felt, I can do something with this.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd drawn the character Little Blue. He'd been kind of knocking around my notebooks for a little while, and it began to take shape from there, really, while I was out there. Obviously, I was making journals, my little kind of travel journal as I went. Little Blue is myself, basically.
But is yourself a little bit smaller and with sort of vacuum cleaner nose?
Well, this was it. Yeah, the nose kind of grew when I began placing him in Vietnam because you could suck in all the smells. So there's just a hole in his face where all the smells are just going to go straight into the brain. And that the kind of the jaw is me having a bit of a glass jaw, being a bit vulnerable. There's a few tourists in Saigon. Of course, I stood out. You're a Westerner walking around, you stand out. So I wanted to place Little Blue, and everyone else looks natural as I've drawn them, compared to myself.
So this is a kind of life story in this here, is it?
Pretty much.
So yeah. Did you wind up cooking a lot of pho when you were out there?
No, I didn't cook so much. What I did, I ended up kind of inviting myself into kitchens, standing on the sidelines and grinning and pointing enthusiastically.
And writing down recipes from the looks of things.
Yeah, well, what I tended to get was the older generation of the Vietnamese didn't speak the English too well. They spoke a bit of it, but the kids spoke English very, very well. You always go abroad and find out everyone speaks very good English. So I got talking to them and I'd ask them recipes and how they do things. I mean, it's not a kind of a Slater or a Jamie Oliver type of cookbook. I'm not going to stake any reputation on its recipes, but they are how I interpret the recipes while I was out there in that moment in time.
Have you been cooking them since you come back to the UK?
I've tried the recipe for pho in there. It works okay.
And does it taste the same back in the grey skies of the UK, or is it?
Not really, no. No, it doesn't.
The whole book is full of melancholy pale oranges, pale browns and blues. Mm. Are these the colours that you found while you're out there, or is it more you reaching for a particular palette to evoke that kind of mood of quiet sadness?
There is there's a bit of both there, to be honest, but there is a certain kind of... every now and again you get shocks of pinks and greens, a lot of the buildings or the blossoms or whatever in Saigon. But I do remember it being kind of a grey, dusty, warm place, and that's kind of the palette that I was trying to get across. Because later on, I started off doing kind of cross-hatchings and just seeing if I was going to make it more darker, more of a traditional comic, with kind of the Robert Crumb black cross-hatch and whatever. But I found that I couldn't convey the subtleties of Saigon like that. So I went back to colour, because I was initially... The first six pages were all drawn in colour, and I was prepared to go back and redraw them in black and white again. But no, the colour absolutely worked for me.
I want to ask a little bit about whether it's a comic or a graphic novel, and whether that's a real distinction at all.
I don't know. I read an interview with Daniel Clowes in The Observer last week, and he kind of grudgingly admitted a graphic novel is probably the best way to describe it. Because people will say, what do you draw? And if I say comics... People will naturally assume it's Men in Tights or a funny three-panel strip. So then you have to say, well, I draw graphic novels. And then you get into a whole realm of trying to describe what that is. So at the moment, but it's becoming more into play, I think. I mean, you go into Borders Isn't Round anymore, Waterstones, and you'll see the list of what's in the shop.
So the section, it's there, it's labelled, it exists.
It's there,
now.
Graphic novels is there, and you think, oh, well, very good. We're slowly kind of being... pulled out of the cupboard, as it were.
I was wondering if the restrained palette is a way of distancing it from the kind of glossy, bright colours of the Batman or the Spider-Man as well.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I greatly admire artists like Ritu Madan, Sean Tan, who always, they tend to use a very muted, thoughtful palette, I think. Yeah, not whiz-bang in your face. And yeah, that's where I suppose it's also me kind of turning my back a little bit on animation as well, where a lot of things are very primary. So I ended up doing a lot of kids stuff near the end, and yeah, that was me probably thinking it's time to change the palette. It's
putting the shiny away and focusing on the serious
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You've mentioned a couple of names there. I mean, many of us aren't familiar at all with the best stuff that's going on in graphic novels. Mm. Who else should we be looking out for?
Oh, bloody hell. Well, as I said, Sean and Rutu are probably my favourites. And Ted Stern, who does Fuzz and Pluck. He does black and white cross-hatching, but he's got a very kind of... he's an animator as well, which is very interesting, but he's got a very lucid style that flows and ebbs. And people like Kaz, who's going back a few years now, New York graphic novelist.
Julian Hanshaw talking to Richard Lee. The Art of Faux will be available from July the 1st, price $14.99. That's it from us today on the Books Podcast. In the Guardian review this Saturday, Catherine Hughes considers our growing appetite for gastronomically inspired books, psychologist Dorothy Rowe tells us the truth about lying, and Ali Smith praises the poetry pamphlet. And on guardian.co.uk/books, Melvin Burgess discusses his top 10 books written especially for children, Sam Jordison argues for the return of the Net Book Agreement, and, as Independent Booksellers Week draws to a close, we round up your photographs of the best independent bookshops. Join us again next week when Claire will be back from holiday and tackling the subject of family memoir with Maggie G, Adina Hoffman and Edmund Dewall.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.